guys, I want to switch it up for my shout out to Host Gator. Don't want you to have to listen to the same ad every single time I put out a podcast episode. So now I've decided that Host Gator, while it sounds like it might be a really bad sci-fi horror film, Host Gator, starring like Ricardo Montalban and Paula Abdul, again, no, that is not what HostGator is. HostGator, in fact, is the best place to get a website. They offer premium web hosting, low costs. .net's the best way to get a killer domain name that's not 180 characters. I can let you know that HostGator, again, not a horror film, not a horror film, in fact, offers 24/7 phone chat and email support, because I think we all know that many of us do our best work in the middle of the night on no sleep. When all of our friends are asleep, we feel completely lonely, and we decide it's the best time to work on our website. Only good things can come of that. Just know that HostGator is there for you. I also want to remind you that they can move your site if you have a pre-existing one. All you need to do is go to HostGator.com, buy some hosting, get some .nets, use coupon code JVClub to get an extra 30% off. Support my show. T-shirts are in production. And again, I just want to reiterate, as much as you might want to watch HostGator right after you finish watching Sharktopus or whatever it is that sci-fi is turning out these days, the only place you're going to get HostGator is online. So check it out, guys. And thanks for listening. Okay. Hey, guys. Welcome to episode 81 of the JV Club with my dear friend and guest, Christine Woods. Christine can be seen starring on the new HBO series Hello Ladies with Stephen Merchant. Such a funny, great show. So excited for her, and so excited to see the rest of the season of that show. I'm a huge fan of Stephen Merchant, and I am a huge fan of Christine. So very, very happy to have her on the podcast. I want to get into some shout outs in just a moment, but I did want to acknowledge quickly once again that we do have the upcoming DC, Washington, DC based Benson Ball curated by Tig Notaro. We will be doing a theme park show on Saturday, October 11th. Definitely that Saturday. Get real confused about whether it's the, maybe, you know what, it might be the 10th. Might be the 10th, guys. Might be the 10th. Yeah, it is. And then on Saturday morning, I know I mentioned in a previous episode that I was going to be doing some work in New York. Well, now I can announce proudly that I will be participating in the Legend of Korra panel at New York Comic Con. So that is what that is. I'll be taking a train to DC following that panel, and it's going to be a busy day, but I'm very excited to be there and hopefully meet some fans that I have not met at prior conventions. So excited about that. Also very excited about the wonderful feedback that I got from the Kate Micucci episode. What a fun one that was, huh, guys? I want to thank for their emails, Tammy and Jessica. On Facebook, I want to thank Mike, Amanda, Christian, and Zach. I want to thank on Nerdist, Harvey, Troy, Gary, Beavis, Jackie, David H, PJ. I love you back, PJ. Guano Lad, Michelle, Alec, Bob, Edward, Sheldon, Abbott Crap. First of all, thank you for forcing me to say Abbott Crap, but also wanted to just tell you really quickly, I know that you asked about the book that I called out on the Kate Micucci episode. It's called Tinissima, T-I-N-I-S-I-M-A, and it is about Tina Madotti. I also want to thank Molly in particular for posting Eminem's Mom's Spaghetti video, and Paul as well on Nerdist. And then on Twitter, I want to thank Steve K. I want to thank Oui, Jérôme, c'est moi. I want to thank Roel. I want to thank The Guy Was Right, Ken, Joanna, and King Andrew the First. Your Majesty. That's it for shout outs, guys. I hope you enjoy this episode with Christine, and I look forward to talking to you soon. Bye.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
This is one of those classic podcast beginnings where my guest Christine and I have already spent an hour talking.
We did.
We talked about a lot of stuff that I got to tell you right now, frankly, guys, you really missed out. I don't want to start a podcast by making you feel like you missed out on something privileged, but
but you did.
We did. But I just want to call it like I see it. I'm excited that you picked the JV Club mug that one of my listeners, Adriana, made for me.
This is an official listener mug?
It's an official listener mug.
Oh, I didn't even see that part. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
It's
pretty
so cute.
Adorable for your leaky coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting right down into, now I'm just getting into, it's funny because we've been talking about a lot of spiritual and emotional stuff, and now I'm really grounding us in the reality of the coffee mug,
the leaky coffee, bring it back to the room.
The savory, which you were eating a delicious thing, was if that was from Baby Cakes?
No, this is not from Baby Cakes. This is from an amazing place.
I didn't even
see
what you were eating because I was so preoccupied with our conversation.
It was so good. I've been cleansing for 3 weeks. I know.
Three weeks.
Well, but I've been eating a lot. So yeah. It's like it's a cleanse, and I was taking a bunch of supplements and crap like that, but I was eating like 3 meals a day. So like I was eating plenty, but
okay, I'm
just really healthy.
The microphone is close enough. I think you can hold it closer. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. How's this?
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, great.
Great.
But anyway, it was just it's like a pastry, like a muffin, but with like roasted vegetables.
Oh, yeah. Was there any cheese in it? Was it moist?
There was like gobs of cream cheese in there.
Oh, cream cheese.
Cream cheese, yeah.
Where did you get it?
This place called Food and Coffee. Just like food plus sign coffee,
okay.
Right by Larchmont.
They
by
got
Baby
real
Cakes.
Specific.
Yeah, so good. So delicious.
I like that they went like, what's the word I'm looking for? Utilitarian with their description.
Very pared down.
This is what you get.
Yeah, food plus coffee. And also amazing desserts. But it's also, it's like you walk past and you're like, oh, well, that seems kind of boring. But you go inside and the food's amazing. So I don't know if they're doing themselves a disservice by like false advertising how bad they are. I mean, at least do it the other way.
I feel like I haven't been giving Larchmont its due.
I love
There's been
Larchmont.
A lot going on down there that I don't get. I used to go... Guys, I know you love this Inside LA stuff. There's so much to be enjoyed about this neighborhood bullshit.
It's the best.
Larchmont Village, for those of you who don't know, is a lovely little pocket in very central Los Angeles that is kind of folksy. It's folksy, so there's like little stationery stores and little trinket stores, but it's also very up and coming in terms of like it is the place that you'll find like a great coffee place and like a hipster clothing boutique as well.
Yeah, but it's also like one strip.
It's just one little
strip. You can park and then just go to like breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Correct.
And buy some
Pop
like really expensive lotion at the beauty supply place
and
that I will drive across town to go to.
Yeah.
And Larchmont Wine and Cheese, the best sandwiches in Los Angeles.
Are they?
Have you not had a Larchmont Wine and Cheese sandwich?
Can I? Because these aren't the
breads. Oh, yeah, you can. You're allergic to them.
But I didn't know there were baby cakes moved in.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know about Food Plus Coffee.
Food Plus Coffee is phenomenal.
And then there's Cafe Gratitude, which I don't know if I've brought up on the podcast before, but Cafe Gratitude is sort of not a part of that strip. It's way further up at Larchmont and Melrose, and it originates from San Francisco and has a menu.
Mm.
I don't think I've ever talked about this on the podcast, but it's
a lot of kimchi.
A lot of kimchi, too much garlic because there's a lot of raw food and people like to do raw garlicky stuff. But it is super hippy dippy.
Yeah, but don't make a mistake on the menu though. Like, don't accidentally get the thing that gives you diarrhea for 2 days.
Which you probably will unless you're with someone experienced. You really need
a spirit guide. You need a spirit guide. You really do.
You do. You do because you need that person who's going to say, "Oh no! I've tried it all. Do not get that."
And you need the person to be like, "It's going to be okay." When you have a stomachache and you're like.
That's health.
Yeah.
That's just good health.
Yeah.
That's your intestines not knowing how to process all that kale. And the menu on top of that is, it's like it's adjectives. And all of it is like, I am healthy. I am loving. I am forgiving. I don't know what you'd be forgiving about.
I am dazzling.
I am sensational.
Mm-hmm.
Every single adjective that you can imagine that is like a positive attribute, they have named it a menu item after. So when they ask you what you want to order, you have to say, I'll have, I am fulfilled.
Yeah. And you can't be like the Caesar salad because then they're like, the what?
Yeah.
They make you
say it. And then your guy has to nudge you.
Yeah. And then they have the question of the day.
They do have the question of the day.
Just like, what are you grateful for?
Yeah.
Or like, what brings you joy in your life?
And then you're like, am I telling you, perfect stranger? Or are we discussing
this
at the table?
And then
they're like, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Whatever you want.
I love LA.
I know, but it originates from San Francisco, which is even right. more like that, right. like Berkeley sort of.
Yeah,
I
remember like when they said they were coming clean, to LA, I was like, food, but yeah. they're like times a million.
Yeah. I apologize for my allergenic sniffling. It's pretty nasal. I'm a little worried that I have to record a cartoon pretty soon, and I'm a little worried it's going to be like, hey, everybody. Yeah. So we'll see. We're hoping for the best. You know what I'm taking is Mucinex. Have you ever taken that?
Is that makes all the stuff come out?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess someone said you have to take this because it's what like singers and voiceover people take to just try to get everything
make it
out.
Come out of you.
Yeah. And that's all it is. It doesn't have any like weird sort of non-drowsy.
It's just an expectorant.
It's an expectorant. Mm-hmm. It's an expectorant.
I'm smart.
And this podcast is also an expectorant mm-hmm. of emotion.
Let's
and
do
humor.
It.
So here's what I want to, I think we'll probably end up jettisoning into more kind of cerebral stuff by virtue of who we both are and our friendship. But I actually don't think I know where you grew up. Like, I don't know where you were a teenager. Or if I do, I've forgotten.
I grew up down in South Orange County.
Yeah, I did.
Behind
I
the
that.
Orange Curtain.
Behind the Orange Curtain, yeah.
I survived.
Yeah. And you were the opposite of
everyone around.
People, whatever someone's expectation is yeah. of Orange County.
Well, I mean, Orange County is gigantic. It's yeah. really, it's not just gated communities. Like, it's Anaheim. And you know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
it's totally middle class.
And there's like a great, there's a whole like, Vietnamese community,
oh,
like a town
yeah.
that's
yeah,
just
it's
in Orange
very
County that's,
ethnically,
yeah.
culturally diverse
because yeah.
it's huge. I mean, it's like Los Angeles. There's so many different neighborhoods and, you know, places that you can grow up in Orange County. But I grew up in just like very cookie cutter, suburban, every house looked the same on top of a hill. Like, I think that my parents, I think they bought the house while it was being built. So it was
yep.
like one little community in Orange County. Like, it was basically like utopian. Like, my parents both were from Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, you know what? We're going to go down to Southern California. We're going to have this amazing, rich experience for our kids. They're going to be safe. They're going to be this. They're going to be that. But I think that what they ended up with was like a lot of debt
uh-huh.
just how expensive it was to
yeah.
raise a family down there.
Yeah.
But
what did your parents do for a living?
My mom was a dental hygienist, mm-hmm. recently retired, and my dad still works. He works for like a lumber company. Very typical like mm-hmm. Orange County suburban mm-hmm. kind of like commuter parents mm-hmm. type thing. But yeah, Orange County was an interesting place to grow up just because Disneyland was right there. So we would always get like Disneyland passes for the summer and
oh,
go like every day. And, but it was just a lot of coffee beans, a lot of like drive-through Jack in the Box. Like
yeah.
there was not a lot of fun, like restaurants.
Culture.
You couldn't do that stuff. We would go to like dance clubs.
Uh-huh.
Like 18 and over dance clubs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's this one called Kokomo's. It was so gross. Yeah, there was not much.
What
not much
kind
going
of
on.
Music was Kokomo's playing? Like top
40? Like house music.
Okay.
Like weird, not good house music.
Okay.
And I love me some house music, but just like the kind that's poor.
Yeah.
It's not good.
I'm trying to think if I like house music. I would say in general, I do not, maybe.
I mean, I feel like I like it if it serves a purpose.
Yeah.
Like, I don't,
you
I'm not sitting
like,
at home like,
yeah.
ooh. But if I like really have to clean the inside of my shower, like I
yeah.
listen to house music.
Okay. See, even still for me, cleaning the inside of my shower, the chances are I'm going to be like, I got to get some old Billy Joel on to clean the shower.
Billy Joel is really good clean your house
I
music.
I mean, well, it's very good sing-along music. There's
yeah.
no question about that. And if you're going to be
is.
In your bathroom, chances are the acoustics are pretty good.
Yeah, so
that might
put
be
on
your big chance.
Billy. Yeah, no, I like that.
Whereas house music, I feel like in general I'm drawn to music I can sing along to, and I don't know that house music is that music.
No, it's not. But that's also like, it's interesting because growing up in Orange County, there was a lot of like rave culture,
mm-hmm.
and so we listened to like a lot of house music and like drum and bass and like all this like weird music that I would not touch with a, you know, a pole today.
Yeah.
But it was like the culture down there was very much like escape like escape your house.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So we would like listen to a lot of like weird ravey house music and like go to dance clubs and like drive out to the desert.
And would you go to raves?
I mean, I think I went to like two and I was kind of like, this is bad. Like, look at me. I'm like breaking the rules because I'm driving into Los Angeles with a friend and like staying up till three. But
yeah,
I mean, it happened like twice. But Orange County had a big, like, parents wouldn't be home scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like we would like house party and do all this weird stuff, but we would stay like in our neighborhoods.
I did a good amount of that too, I think. Yeah, somebody's parents are out of town. And I did that to my dad. I've said this on the podcast before, but like I let people that I didn't know very well like stay at my house and stuff, and luckily they were good kids, but looking back, I'm like, God, they totally could have robbed us blind. What an asshole move of me.
Totally.
Your poor parents. Boy, they really just like, they really put a lot of trust in their children when, as teenagers, many of us are just not in the space where we're being thoughtful in any way, shape, or form about our parents.
I feel like my parents trusted me way too much. I had a boyfriend in high school. It was like my first love. I was crazy about him. And he would like spend the fucking night at my house.
And did they know about it?
Yeah.
Oh, they did. So they were like, we'd rather have him here when we can supervise it.
Or how about like, no, he can't spend the night. And no, you can't leave.
Yeah.
Like just stay. Yeah. Just be a normal kid. But I just, I feel like there was something, you know, having two parents that are from like Northern California, from Oakland, where they like did a lot of stuff, it's like they probably felt bad that after, you know, having a teenager kind of isolated in this kind of suburban, boring place.
Yeah.
So I think they wanted to give me a sense of independence that I just couldn't have because I didn't live in a city.
And so you're an only child?
No, I have a big brother.
Okay.
Yeah, he's like 3 years older than me.
Okay.
He's a paramedic in Redding, California.
Fantastic.
Yeah, he's wonderful. He's getting married in May.
Listen to that.
Yeah.
Okay, I think, yeah, the way that you're describing it, I feel like I knew the other brother, but then everything you just said, I was like, oh, I guess she was an
only child. We were very, but that's the thing. I think another Orange County, it lends itself to being on like 20 sports teams and like, you know, creating these activities that you need in order to have, you know, energy and steam blown off a little bit. So we would like eat dinner together, but then we would have like five practices and like this and that and rehearsal. And
what did you, what were your extracurriculars?
I played volleyball for years. And I just was, you know, in all the like drama clubs and stuff and just singing and just like weird dance competitions. I mean, I was such a busy child, that I think that's my excuse for why I can be pretty lazy sometimes. Because I'm just like, I did it all.
No kidding.
I've seen it all. I just want to sit on the couch.
I've been around that volleyball bend.
Yeah.
How? Yeah, I was not that busy. I spent a lot of time just riding around on my bike doing nothing. I just wasn't involved in stuff like that so much. I mean, I did a lot of like, I mean, I did a lot of theater stuff, but but I never was on a sports team, so I never had practice like that.
But you probably like read a lot.
I did. I spent a ton of time, reading, but also I'm sure watching way too much television and stuff.
Yeah.
Volleyball.
I played beach volleyball for years.
Do you still like playing volleyball? That does seem very Orange County.
It's very Orange County. Orange County is very big, like club sport. Like you go, you play in high school, but then you do your club sport, which was like the thing that would get you a scholarship.
Oh, okay.
Like Orange County is like corporate lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like everything you're doing is to prepare you for what you will do in 6 to 8 years from then.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah. It's like a corporate child activity. Very, I mean, certainly nothing wrong with it because I'm sure that, you know, a lot of people were able to get into great colleges because of, you know, all the crap that they did. But yeah, not my thing. But yeah, volleyball was really fun and really just something that everybody did down there.
Were you really good at it?
I was decent.
Yeah.
Just because I did it so much.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to like play. Gosh, it's so funny. I haven't thought about this in so long. I really wanted to play college volleyball at Long Beach State, like Misty May Trainer. We would go like watch her play. And she's just like so good that was, it was like go to college to play a sport or go to college to like a great theater program.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not for my mind. God forbid.
Those are the two choices.
Yeah, those are the two choices.
How were you in, like, scholastically, just in regular class? Like,
I was mediocre. Well, no. I mean, I always had, like, a 3.5. Mm-hmm. But I never worked hard at it. And my biggest insecurity, I think, as an adult is always I'm not smart enough. Like, it's like I'm not educated enough. I'm not smart enough. And so I think that it's an interesting cross to bear for me as an adult that, like, scholastically I didn't really put in the time that I wish I would have.
Yeah.
But
don't you feel, I mean, I don't know. I guess there's just such a cross-section of people, some of whom are, like, really where, you know, where they went to college with, like, a badge of honor. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I've joked about this before, but, like, there are just certain schools where, I don't know, when I lived in San Francisco, there was this pocket of people who'd all been to Brown. And I listened to them talk about Brown so much. Like, I was like, I just don't feel that kind of, I mean, I went to two different schools and both of them were like to serve a purpose.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like, I feel sort of scattered even about my own kind of alumnus status because I sort of didn't belong to either school because I did half and half.
Right.
And so even friends of mine who graduated from one or graduated from the other that like keep in touch with each other and have that sort of core classmanship, I don't feel like I have it with either place.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember feeling like, I don't know why it was so specific with Brown, but like that is one of those universities where you go there and like it remains, I'm not, listen guys, if some of you went to Brown and you don't give a shit that you went to Brown, that's also fine. But most people that I know that went to a school like Brown, it starts, it becomes a part of your life and it stays a part of your life. Mm-hmm. And it's something that comes up in conversation still with people. Mm-hmm. I just remember thinking that like in my late 20s, still living in San Francisco and like coming across someone and then being like, oh yeah, yeah, we were at Brown together. And It was something that was so, but and I kind of envy that. But yeah, at the same time, I also turned my nose up at it. Like I envied it, but I think maybe I was intimidated by it because I remember also being like, "Oh, stop it!" With you went to
where
Brown.
Did you go to school?
I went to Northern Arizona University for the first 2 years, and then San Francisco State for the last one. I moved to San Francisco.
Yeah, I went to U of A, which is basically like,
oh God, that's where I'm
glorified.
From,
oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. You totally. This. It's well, that's such an Orange County thing. It's
everyone,
like, everyone from
Orange
U of A goes to San Diego.
Yeah,
basically, or somewhere in Orange County or LA.
Yeah,
and then everyone that goes to Tucson goes to U of A.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you like living in Tucson?
I loved Tucson. I loved, like, I don't know. There was, at first, when I first moved there, I was like, great. Orange County to Tucson? Like, what am I, like, all the buildings were, like, made of clay. Like, there was no, I was just like, is this really my experience as a college student? But I, great music scene, really cool. And also I went for a BFA musical theater program, so I was so enmeshed in, you know, I was on a scholarship, so it's like I didn't really have much time to explore, but it's not really a place to do so anyway. So really good art scene, really beautiful. And the desert, there's something so romantic and so beautiful about the desert, and I still have such a warm spot in my heart when I go to Arizona. It just feels like home. Like, it just feels very spiritual to me. I love it so much.
I'm so glad that you feel that way about it. Yeah, I love being there very specific times of year because I can't stand heat.
Oh
so,
my God, so
I cannot go back unless, like, I'm going, I'll be there this next weekend, and I'm hoping that it's cooled down enough that I won't just be miserable.
Yeah.
But in the winter, I love it so much.
It's so gorgeous in the winter, like a summer night or a winter night in Tucson.
It's so crisp,
like up in the foothills.
Clear, and the air is so clean in the foothills.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that's where I always like to stay now. Is up in the foothills because it just feels. Yeah, there's something really special about it, and there was something really special for me about being a teenager. Like being in the desert, like without much to do, you sort of do like just drive around and then go park somewhere where it's dark and like listen to music and look at the stars because ain't nothing else going on.
Yeah. No, I randomly was like looking through some of my old college things before coming to see you today. And I found this like really cute love poem from this guy that I dated in my theater department. Yeah. And his name was Josh Lamoureux, and he's like married and has a beautiful family, and he's actually from Tucson. Like, maybe you know each other.
Maybe. Maybe.
Josh Lamoureux, he was a musician. Huh. And he like just wrote me this really great poem, and we had this like romantic evening where we drove out to the desert and there was nothing around us. And I remember I was, I don't know, 17 or 18, and I remember just being with this boy and like looking up and thinking like, this is the most romantic thing that's ever happened to me. Oh. I've never been in an area that I could really feel alone and isolated.
I bet you guys drove out to Gates Pass. Did you drive out to Gates Pass?
I don't know.
Out by the Desert Museum? Because there's like a classic area where you can go that's like, you go, boy, we're so location specific, but
yeah.
You go out west and you sort of get to a point where you're sort of past Tucson because there's like a mountain, like a mountain is sort of like behind, is like keeping you from seeing the city of Tucson. So it gets even more dark, and it's a great place to watch the sunset, and it's out by Old Tucson and by the Desert Museum. And it's just like a good, there's a lot of rocks that you can like clamber up on and like lie there and look at the stars.
Been past
and,
Old Tucson.
Yeah.
I mean, that it sounds, that's a, that's it sounds
a,
right.
You usually head west for like a romantic evening under the stars.
But I had one New Year's Eve being there. Totally New Year's Eve there.
Yeah, like me and a boy, like just went
it's
out.
So
to,
romantic.
Just
the
went
desert.
Out and like played guitar on a picnic blanket
totally.
And like didn't know when the clock struck because it was dead silent. Yeah. It was just the desert.
And this guy, Josh, he put his headlights on and like played music, and I remember just like dancing with him like under the stars.
It's so classic.
And just like being like a girl from Orange County where it's like you can't, like the most romantic thing I ever did was like going to the parking lot of Del Taco and just be, you know, it's like you didn't have places to go to just like be independent, and just that romantic notion of like being in a meditative space. I hadn't experienced it until I went to Tucson.
God, that makes a lot of sense to me. Especially too, because you were talking earlier about your boyfriend and the fact that like, I mean, talk about the polar opposite of that. It's like you spent all of this time at your own home under your parents' roof with him. Like, it sounds very domestic.
Yeah, yeah.
Like early. How old were you when you got involved with him?
My first boyfriend?
Mm-hmm. Like the one that was that spent the
16.
Night at your house.
16. Like I think like, 15 or 16.
What was it like before him? Did you date? Did you have crushes? Did you, like,
I
what
had
made
crushes.
What made that different and serious?
Well, I remember he was like in the theater department. And before I met him, I had like boys that I would have crushes on. And, you know, they were always like on the men's volleyball team, or always like a guy who played baseball, or like a friend of my older brother's. But then I met this guy who was like an artist.
Yeah.
and like a singer, and like wrote love notes, and I was just like, oh my God, this guy, like none of the other boys get it.
Yeah.
But he really gets it. So I remember just being very taken by his kind of like artistic, sensitive, brooding, but yeah, so he was like my high school sweetheart.
How long were you guys together?
I think we were together for like 2.5 years
God,
or 3 years.
It always
maybe?
Amazes me whenever somebody talks about a relationship that sustained itself that long through the most tempestuous, like people can be so, rightly so, hormonally, like all over the place and, you know, fickle in a very natural way, very organic way, organically fickle.
Yeah.
That's like really the time to be it.
Yeah.
And to sort of get through. Did you weather like storms with him? Like were there,
kind
did you have sort of mature ups and downs?
Well, I remember, I mean, this is like, well, okay, I'm just going to go there. I had like a little bit of a drug problem.
I was going to ask you because of the raids and just like the fact that it was Orange County.
Yeah, I mean, Orange
County. I've totally outed myself as like being a very irresponsible teenager.
Yeah,
so
I was not the most responsible teenager. I mean, but I really like, you know what, nothing against Orange County. I think it's just like your friends and your circumstances and if your family's really up in your business or not. But like Orange County does kind of lend itself to kids with a lot of money buying drugs and being like a cute girl from Orange County. you're welcomed in to like these circles, and they just like put drugs in your mouth, and like you have really intense experiences. Yeah. And I remember, God, this is so interesting. I remember like always going to this house and just like getting so high and just being so just messed up and like so cliche, like listening to like the White Album, just like so fucking high.
You're speaking my language.
And just being so removed from, I don't know, just the reality of my life as a teenager. And, but I remember specifically this one time, this is crazy. It was like New Year's, and I think I was like 15, and I was at this house party, and I was inebriated, like just so drunk. And I hadn't, up until that point, like I hadn't really done drugs or alcohol. Like I was kind of a goody goody. And then I was so drunk. And then a friend of mine like gave me LSD. I was 15. And I was shit-faced. And so that was like the moment that I just like shifted into this like other group of friends, like other, do you know what I mean? Other reality.
Oh, I know what you mean.
And I was just like, and I just saw Orange County for like what it was. And I was just like, oh, this place, I'm trapped here. And so I think that kind of started the, when I started dating this guy and I started to get like all artistic and you know, for in one sense, it's really, I think it shaped me as an artist a little bit. And mm-hmm. I think that it really brought to light that I wanted to be creative for a living and that I wanted to, you know, have a different life than the one I grew up in. Mm-hmm. But it was, I think, a very typical suburban experience.
Yeah.
You know?
And so was that, did you do a lot of acid?
No, I mean, like I just smoked a lot of pot.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we popped a lot of pills, you know, and that kind of thing. And I was never really destructive and I never, you know, found myself in really unsafe situations, but it was just, it checked out.
Mm-hmm.
We would just check out.
Yeah.
And so it was what was interesting.
You would
though,
check out, but you would also check into something completely different.
Totally.
And that's what's so, exactly. Yeah, that's what's interesting exactly. About it is that I think it depends on kind of the experience that you're chasing or what you talked about, which is like this kind of idea of being given permission. And I always mm-hmm. go back and forth on this podcast about, you know, with the younger listeners about not wanting to encourage drug use because
right.
It's really, you're really taking a risk.
Yeah.
You're just taking a risk and I can't condone that risk
right.
Responsibly. But at the same time, for those of us who did go down that road and who have done it
mm-hmm.
and who can acknowledge that mm-hmm. like it shaped us in some way, mm-hmm. in some cases better, in some cases, I don't know, worse, but like,
yeah.
I feel like I'm more, like there are things about the way my brain works that probably have been altered by too much
totally.
LSD. But
totally.
But that ultimately, I mean, if ultimately the goal is to be in a place in your life where you don't regret anything because you feel happy with the person uh-huh. that you are in the present, that's fine. But it's interesting that there's a checking out that happens in certain communities where if somebody has this sort of artistic bent that they maybe are just starting to discover, that the impatience that you feel as a young person, kind of getting to know yourself, coming to understand that your environment isn't representative of who you are,
mm-hmm.
but having no choice but to remain there
mm-hmm.
for some period of time.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just like a breeding ground for like, okay, how can I make, I've got it. Something has to change about this experience. And if all
right.
if my only option is seems to be the Del Taco parking lot,
yeah.
I guess I might as well be high
exactly.
in the Del Taco parking lot because maybe at least I'll enjoy
yeah.
this music I'm listening to on a more profound level.
Right,
or
totally.
The cracks in the pavement will seem somehow more meaningful.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think too, and it's funny, the whole thing about not having regrets. I sometimes, and not so much anymore, but I remember, you know, years ago, I would look back and just think like, man, I wish that I like studied really hard and I wish that I went to like an Ivy League school, you know, and I wish that it would have been a little bit different. But then I look at my life now and I'm so proud of all the accomplishments I've, you know, been able to have and all the people that I know and the relationships I have. But But yeah, it's interesting that that's why it's like when I do have a family, and I imagine that we will live in a place where there's a lot of stimulation.
Yeah.
To, you know, not necessarily avoid drug use or what have you, but to have the experience be creative as opposed to what you put on to the experience be creative. But I definitely, you know, very close to my family, and I had.
Do you think that your parents know now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Did they know then?
I think they had like a little bit of an idea. I mean, they definitely weren't born yesterday, but I think that.
Did they do that stuff when they were younger, growing up in the Bay Area?
No, I don't think so. I think that they maybe as like young adults, but I mean, they're like my dad was a military family. His dad was in the military, so they moved like 15 times. Mm. But yeah, my mom was kind of like a goody-goody, I think, in high school. But yeah, I don't really know. But I definitely know that they were aware of me and what I was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was your brother, did he have similar?
No.
Different?
So conscientious and just very hardworking and like an athlete and junior fireman and like just very like, just a lot of activities going on all the time.
Did you have crushes on his friends? Because he's 3 years older. That's like
He had some cute friends. I remember I was always very nervous because I wanted them to think I was really cool because I was a little bit of a tomboy because, I mean, I had an older brother and I just like thought he was so cool.
Yeah.
And I remember my whole thing, my like way of flirting with his friends was to just like be really destructive and like go and like kick them and just like I wanted to like, I don't know, like be very aggressive to get them to like pay attention to me, like to think that I was one of them, so I would sneak my way into like their circles and,
yeah,
that's actually really easy to picture. I can totally picture you being like, I'm gonna bully you, what are you gonna do about
it?
Pay attention to me.
Exactly.
It's so funny just to go back to you saying that the things that we end up carrying around with us that we're self-conscious about, like this idea of you feeling like, you know, you're not like the brightest person in the room, or that you're not educated in that way, which is so hilarious to me because nothing about you comes off as, but she clearly did not have a great education or like, what is,
yeah. And that's interesting. My wonderful, amazing fiance, John Ames. Hi, honey. went to Bard College. He's actually from Los Angeles. He's so smart. He like went to law school. He's just so smart. So he kind of like represents that world. Uh-huh. And sometimes I look at him and I'm just like, what did you say? like he's so just like not, like he's so un, like he doesn't wear that as a badge of honor in the way that I wear my lack of that as a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's something I'm ashamed of. He's just like, it is what it is. And doesn't see me as anything, you know, less than him.
Yeah. But still for him to sort of funny. Have a vernacular that's built in about just an education that he doesn't think one way or the other about, and to just like spout something and for you to go, I don't even know. Like, that was not part of my experience.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. But it's interesting the things that we think about ourselves are sometimes just so off base.
The stories that we tell ourselves. I was talking to a friend of mine who's really into, who's been really pursuing like a lot of Buddhist principles, and boy, there's just no way to, this has come up on the podcast before because I always talk about how much I say like and how many, many of us do because it's just, I mean, it just gets drilled into you when you're a teenager on the West Coast anyway.
Oh yeah.
And that there's no way to not, for me to not say like, and he's like really into like Buddhist principles.
He's like a Buddhist.
He's like really following up on that and exploring it. But this idea, this very like, this is a name that I, frankly, I'm surprised I haven't uttered more on the podcast other than that I don't read him, but, I think I brought him up once and was like, yeah, this is somebody that like I immediately dismissed because it was so of the moment that it just seemed like cheesy. But this kind of Eckhart Tolle, like the power of now is what we all sort of associate with him. But I think that he is part of this kind of ideology that is to do with In terms of like what your experience with spirituality is, you know, for some people it can be praying to God. For some people it can be praying to the universe, or just like surrendering this idea of control and that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. or just celebrating, you know, for some people spirituality is like celebrating the magic of science because that's mm-hmm. enough. Mm-hmm. But I've been talking to my friend who's been doing a lot of kind of research and exploring this sort of Buddhist side of things. And one of the things that he's been talking about a lot lately is the idea of these, of like another form of spirituality, just being about stopping all the stories that you tell mm-hmm. about yourself. Mm-hmm. The idea that you are stripping away mm-hmm. all of the things that you say, well, yeah, but I'm this, or oh, I'm yeah. this, or other people think I'm this, or, yeah. and that you just kind of get rid of so much of that, that you're like coming into contact with, frankly, kind of the child in you yeah. that is just unmarked, totally mm-hmm. unmarked.
Yeah. And I think too, just in Buddhism specifically, just of like the, you know, meditation that I do sometimes, like a mindful practice, it's like all of those stories and all of those things that just happen to us because we're people, it's not our fault.
Yeah.
You know, so to have, I mean, your mind is a really scary place, and everything that comes into your head throughout the day is not really who you are. And it's just, it's something that happens. It's like stepping in mud mm-hmm. and your humanity is not your fault. So if you have spirituality in this kind of Buddhist way, For me personally, I find it to be so valuable to have those moments where you go, oh, that's a weird thing that popped into my head. Okay, moving on. Mm-hmm. And to not go on the train of all of these weird stories that prevent us from really being in the moment. Yeah. And I think too, not being able to sit with the, you know, sometimes the anxiety and the pain that those thoughts cause, it's really cutting yourself off from what makes you so human, and yeah. acknowledging those things make you a good friend and a good partner and a good parent and a good, you know, and, yeah. but I like the idea that spirituality is not to avoid your humanity. I think it's to nurture and accept it mm-hmm. and not pretend like it's something to be managed. It's yeah. just something that is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, is that something too, that just happens to people? I guess not everybody, but that does kind of get, I talk a lot about the sort of gifts that you get as you get older, for people who are younger and feeling like, God, it's got to get better than this. Or for mm-hmm. people who are like, I'm dreading getting older because it feels like there's a letting go of like all this youthfulness and stuff, mm-hmm. That I think we can all argue it doesn't need to be let go of, but that you can get more, like that you have the opportunity, the longer you live with yourself, to really get comfortable with a mess
mm-hmm.
and to understand that like getting comfortable with messiness is very different than creating messes for yourself to distract yourself from other messes. Like, I think that's very common too, is like as a younger person, I think I created, like, I would obsess over the wrong drama, or create the wrong drama, which is to say, like, I would obsess over somebody that someone didn't like me, just like a girl mm-hmm. who didn't like me, and I would really, really worry about that, and mm-hmm. like not be able to sleep, and like, what did I do? Why does she not like me so much? And like, how can I fix this? And that was like a drama I was allowing to happen that was very messy.
Yeah.
Instead of, what can I put my energy and focus into right. that like really is a thing and really uh-huh. can be looked at and really has more to do with who you whatever's are. Going on yeah. in here than this yeah. external noise.
Yeah. And I think we create stuff like drama with people or drama with experiences in order to avoid just like the basic human things that are happening inside us. Like, we create stuff and we go on these rides with this, you know, crap that's happening in our lives to avoid, oh, I feel lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I'm feeling anxious. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, instead of sitting and being like, wow, today's a lonely day, it's like there's some other problem mm-hmm. that's distracting us from the reality of our experience. So that's why I think meditation is so great. Because it's like you for 5 minutes a day. I mean, I try to meditate every day. God, I try really hard. Yeah. I mean,
I'm not great at that either.
It's tough. It's really hard to carve out time because, you know, and sometimes if it's 5 minutes, if it's 2 minutes, if it's 30 seconds, like if you do anything to, but it's so nice because it's time to sit with just your humanity. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds so cheesy and so silly and people are probably like, ugh, Woods. but it's time to not create the drama. Yeah. It's time to just sit.
Yeah. I completely get it. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. What prompted the cleanse?
Well, surface answer, Emmys. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of press to do mm-hmm. and I had a lot of things to do. So I needed to put down the hamburger because I'm someone who can eat a hamburger every day if left to my own, you know?
Yeah, same. So, I'm really good if I have like, if I can be goal oriented and say, all right, I'm going to do my thing. Right. But then at a certain point, then I got to be a grown up about this particular part of my life mm-hmm. because it's part of my career.
Yeah.
And like, that's because I did the same thing. I think I knew I was going to the Emmys. I knew I didn't. I mean, I'm not on a show and I didn't have to do any press. But I was like, you know what? I just want to be at the Emmys feeling great. And if feeling great means that like for 3 weeks before that, I'm more strict about my diet and exercise.
And your health.
Not in a, in a brutal way and not in a punishment way.
But in like a drink a lot of water every day.
Yeah, like I'm looking forward to feeling good in my skin and in my mm-hmm. body in this context. Mm-hmm. It's just a slippery slope. Yeah. That's all. We just have to be careful to not have it be like, or I'm going to hate myself because my dress feels tight or whatever.
Right, and if you like decide one day, you're like, you know what? I need a cookie.
Yeah.
And when you do that and you like, you know, go into like a tailspin because you ate a cookie, like that's not good.
That's not good at all. But, I did not get to see you, but I mean, I will. We don't talk about career, mm-hmm. but I will touch briefly on the fact that I'm super excited that you were on the new Stephen Merchant vehicle on HBO. Very excited. So proud. And I remember like forever ago when you shot the pilot and it's so fun to
that was a long
see
time
everything
ago.
Come to fruition. It felt like forever ago because HBO mm-hmm. can also like really take its time with production and stuff.
Oh, they really do. And it's interesting too. It's you have a lot of time off. I mean, HBO season is pretty short.
Yeah.
So it provides your life with a lot of space creatively, but it's also that's scary
to be like,
okay, you're limited in what you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember talking about that with Kathleen Rose Perkins. Cause she's on mm-hmm. episodes and same mm-hmm. thing. It's like she'd disappear and go to England for a couple of months and shoot the show and then come back and sort of go, okay, I know like technically I'm on a show. It's very well regarded. Mm-hmm. Boy,
now
I know. Yeah,
and that's such a great lesson too. It's like, you know, your life is it's so filled with wonderful stuff in terms of greatness, but in terms of time, you have a lot of free time and all this space, and to not go into that place of like, well, I must fill it.
Yeah,
if there's space. I must fill the space.
Yeah.
And being able to be like, well, maybe I don't need to fill the space. Like, isn't it enough that like I work for 3 months out of the year? Like, is that not enough? But I think that for a lot of us, it's just not.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know. Work ethic is so interesting, like where it comes from and how much of it is nature versus nurture mm-hmm. and how much is it like attached to whatever guilt that those of us who have, you know, not just in Hollywood, but like anybody out mm-hmm. there in the world who has a job that's a little bit different than a 9-to-5 in an office mm-hmm. is like, how peaceful are you about it? And how peaceful are you about it with regard to your own core feelings about it versus what you assume other people think about it?
Right.
You know, that's a lot to sift through for mm-hmm. me because I feel like part of it is that I really do have an itch to create and to mm-hmm. be participative in something more mm-hmm. than, you know, because I thought that too when I was on Dinner and a Movie. It was like, oh, I just work 6 weeks out of the year. I mean, I basically work 6 weeks out of the year.
Yeah.
And if I wanted to, I could move back up to San Francisco afford living in a house by myself. Like, not, I mean, please, I wasn't like rolling in money, but I mean, right. I could have lived in an apartment, like a nice apartment mm-hmm. in San Francisco, just done that job, not auditioned for anything else, and just, I don't know what, like, yeah. I don't know what that unstructured time would look like. What person could I have been or turned into? Would I volunteer a bunch of time? Uh-huh. Would I just sit around? Would I get really fat and then get really skinny before I had to go do that? Like, would I become a chef? Like, what would that have looked like?
Yeah.
But ultimately, you know, none of that was enough. I still wanted to audition. I wanted to do yeah. other stuff. I wanted to,
yeah.
And
that's also the creativity versus productivity thing that I think that we all struggle with in this town. It's like, to be very creative is sometimes not necessarily to be productive. And I think that that's, you know, when you're developing things or you're writing, it's like, and also specifically as an actor, like so much of your preparation is not productive.
Yeah.
I mean, you're sitting there and you're creating things and you're being very creative, but you're not making anything, you know what I mean? So yeah. I think that there's, it's just, it can get confusing. It can get, at the end of the day, you look down and you're like, but I didn't do anything.
And I am having, even right now, my own relationship to the listener thinking like, you know, for those people who listen to this podcast and are putting in
so 50 much
hours a week working someplace hard.
Yeah.
I do feel self-conscious about, you know, yeah, it's saying like, guilt. I mean, yeah, one day I just went out and puttered around in my yard and replanted yeah. some plants. And
yeah, definitely. You know. But I think that people who work their butts off, and like my parents were just so hardworking, like so just middle class, worked their butts off. And just the idea that, and I remember my mom being like, "When you're going to be an artist and you're going to have space in your life." And I think that people who work really hard, we almost owe it to them to have space in our lives and do the best possible work we can do in our field, so then they can like watch us on TV and feel happy. You know, yeah. I mean, I know that's like a very, very kind and of also, reduced.
I will say this, know. But like often, now I'm just trying to like back it up with something. But often, like, you know, you see somebody who's on, you know, people talk about like, how could you not be happy working on a show? Like, I'm just any example, like a CSI show or like mm-hmm, a Bones. I'm thinking mm-hmm. specifically of like these 1 hour dramas.
Yeah, like the episodics.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
Where you're like, you know, you're making all this money and all this mm-hmm. stuff, but like for sure, and you have all this time off, but for sure, you can be working 18 to 20 hours a day mm-hmm. for that entire time, basically. And mm-hmm. it, and then when you're not doing that, you have to do press. And when you're not doing that, you have to, and people really do. That's why people like lose their families because oh, yeah. they just don't, there is only so much that you can give
working.
And
over,
so sometimes you get way more, you get time off
yeah.
because the time that you're putting in when you are working is like kind of brutal. Yeah. I mean, it really is
working over 15 hours a day. In any job
yeah.
is so incredibly difficult. And yeah. there's a lot of people who do that. They're called like firemen.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But there's also actors yeah. that have to do that too. And it can be very, very stressful. But I think that the bottom line is no matter what you do, it's really how you choose to, you know, I don't know, how you choose to manage your thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I think that I don't know. I just think that people can be in the best scenario and just be miserable. And people can be in a miserable scenario and be so truly fulfilled and so truly happy. And I think it just comes back to how you manage your thoughts and how you manage your stress.
Totally.
You know?
I and totally
I think
agree.
That there is, but there is an interest. There is like the artist guilt of like, gosh, you know, I, yeah, it's really fun. It's a great life. I'm so blessed. It's so wonderful. It's so perfect. But at the end of the day, it's challenging. Like it's yeah. it has a whole set of challenges that, you know, are very different from someone with like a 9-to-5 job. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because John, who is a lawyer, it's like he's got this job where he works in an office and he works so hard. And I have such a different experience in my day to day that it's. I don't know. It's just there's such value in both.
Mm-hmm.
Such value in both.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
All right, I got to get into it. Well, first of all, I'm going to quickly do, I think I skipped the cootie catcher the last couple of times. So I'm going to do one question from here And then I'm going to do...
that is the cutest game. Thing I've ever seen.
Okay. So, listen, I want you to feel very free to describe this color as something other than blue, red, green, and yellow, or orange or whatever. If you think that it looks like a certain like tint of that, you can call it whatever you want, because I'm just going to spell it and probably do a bad job spelling to get it started.
Third day period.
Amazing. THIRDDAYPERIOD. Pick a number.
7.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. One more number.
6.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Last number.
5.
Okay. 5. The question under number 5 is... Who did you look up to creatively, famous or not, when you were a teenager?
Oh,
or you could do one of each, like a person in your immediate life, person who was like a famous person.
Okay, teenager, person, famous person, definitely Paul McCartney. I was a huge Beatles freak when I was in high school.
Get Stoned and Listen to the White Album.
Oh my God, it was ridiculous. Like in the Del Taco parking lot. That's what we did.
just as the Beatles intended when they wrote the White Album.
Exactly. Oh gosh. Definitely Paul McCartney. I just had such, and I loved like Wings. Like I just loved him so much.
Have you seen him?
I had never seen him.
I just saw him at Outside Lands. He still got it. I'm sure that comes as no surprise.
So dreamy. I just remember I would listen to Live and Let Die like over and over and over and just like punch the air and just get so pumped on life.
And isn't he the one that is responsible for, I mean, first of all, some of the best lyrics. Like, I mean, of course, I do love Paul most. I mean, I know that that's a real divider.
He's
I know
the heart.
I know most people love Ringo most, but we love Paul most.
Well, it's like they're all body parts. Like I've thought about this a lot. It's like Paul's the heart.
Okay.
John's the head.
Okay, so who's George?
George is like the sex, like the visceral part. And Ringo is just like the extremities.
I have never heard that said, and I fucking love it to death.
Yeah. No, I did a lot of thinking about the Beatles.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Paul's the lyrics, man. Even just like, let's just cut to the chase and say, and in the end, love you takes equal love you make.
Love you make. Like, it's amazing.
How can you have a bad day knowing that you're responsible for those ears? I get
seriously.
It. Everyone has those days.
Right.
But still.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you've put that out into the world.
So and I'm sure that Sir Paul McCartney manages his thoughts really well.
Yeah.
I'm just assuming.
Oh, you still
know.
Got it.
Oh, I'd love to see him in
concert. We got to make that happen.
I would love to see him in concert.
You know what? I'm going to segue this right into MASH and go ahead and say... I'm gonna come up with so you can spend the day with someone that you looked up to when you were a teenager, and the first person I'm assuming would be Paul. So who are two other people that you would still like to spend the day with, but ultimately maybe also somebody that you liked when you were younger, if possible?
I had a really it's always musicians. Freddie Mercury. I loved Queen so much. And I'm so excited for the feature they're making.
Now, I stayed in a place in Switzerland on Lake Geneva.
Amazing.
Called Montreux. There is a statue of Freddie Mercury there. It's Freddie Mercury tribute town. Because I think he lived there and wrote there, and Queen, I think, even recorded there or something.
That is so cool.
So we got to get you there, because it's pretty crazy to be in possibly the most beautiful place in the world and also
have
that
be
Freddie Mercury related.
That is
Freddie Mercury
so
is a great
cool.
answer. Number 3.
Gene Kelly.
Love it.
Obsessed.
Classy. These are great.
So obsessed with Gene Kelly. Gene Kelly is probably equal to Paul McCartney. But Gene Kelly was childhood.
Yeah.
And teenage years.
Yeah.
Paul was specifically... teen.
Okay. I love this. What about, did you read a lot? I mean, do you have favorite authors and favorite books and stuff?
I didn't read when I was younger. I watched a lot of old movies, but I didn't really read.
Give me 3 movies that you can magically be transported into.
Meet Me in St. Louis. Singing in the Rain.
I've never seen Meet Me in St. Louis.
It's really good, but it's not.
Who's in it?
Judy Garland.
Okay.
It's not everybody's favorite musical, mm-hmm. movie musical, but it's the one that she sings "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas" in. I mean, it is.
God,
so,
I didn't know that was in a musical. What's wrong with me?
It's so powerful, but that was a very deep connection to my grandfather. All of those movies, like he was the one who showed me, like, and they're movies where people sing.
Yeah.
And I was like, what?
Okay, what's the third?
The third one, probably support your local sheriff.
I don't even...
It's such a great movie.
I don't even know what that is.
And also, God...
I gotta get on this.
Cat Ballou, which is this great Western with Jane Fonda.
I've never seen that either.
She was like super young.
What's wrong with me? I gotta write down Cat Ballou too.
Ugh,
these are all things I need to see. Like that, Ballou. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to spell it.
I don't know. I maybe I've just made that up.
Yeah, it's Jane Fonda. She's all right, adorable.
I'm holding on to this answer because I still enjoy it, even though someone complained about it last week. But guys, you know I got to ask a Disneyland question because of the OC connection. She was there every day. Three Disneyland rides that somehow you wish could turn into something real in some way, whatever that means for you.
Definitely Pirates of the Caribbean.
Love it.
Pirates of the Caribbean has such a specific smell.
Oh my God, it's the best smell.
And I remember I
would say that smell and Splash Mountain smell, which is like wet cedar.
Yeah, it's like mildew.
We love mold.
It's like poison, basically. But
listen, penicillin is also mold.
Right, that's true. That's true. It helps. It helps sometimes. But there was... Like, this ex-boyfriend that I had these towels, and I would smell them, and they would instantly transport me back.
I super get it.
To Pirates of the Caribbean.
I super get it.
So it was so gross, but it was so good.
And I also feel like it took me, I mean, this probably isn't true for you because you went there so much more frequently, but I was going definitely every year from as long as I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember when I realized that the ceiling was a ceiling and not just like outside.
Oh, yeah. And that restaurant?
That was real for a really long time for me. I didn't understand how quite it worked because you did have mm-hmm. a sense that you weren't outside.
But you felt like the breeze of outside.
Yeah. So it just didn't, it was like neither here nor there. It was like you didn't have to have a scientific reason. You just understood. I understood that I wasn't outside at Disneyland.
Right.
But I also did not think in any way that I was just like in a room.
Yeah. You were in like some weird dimension.
Yes. It's another dimension.
And you were like, this is happening. I support this being reality. And
God,
then
it's
it was.
Exactly that. Okay, Pirates is a great answer.
Pirates of the Caribbean. It's like, I'm pretty torn. I mean, like, I love Haunted Mansion, but I don't think I would want that to be real.
Yeah.
Probably the Matterhorn.
Great.
That's a really good one.
Great. Christine just pointed, I don't think I've ever shouted this out, but I have a very cool kind of 60s era Matterhorn, giant Matterhorn poster.
It is so awesome.
From Fantasyland.
It's amazing.
Above my desk.
Last one. Probably the Peter Pan ride.
I always
catch that one. And I love it so much.
Thank you, because I forced that answer on someone else, but they heartily agreed because I'm obsessed with
flying going
over
on
London.
That little, like, that ship.
And flying over London.
It's amazing.
Like Big Ben down there. And
I loved that one.
These are great. See, it is a great question.
It's a wonderful question.
It's just for people who aren't Disneyland fans.
They don't get it.
I totally understand.
Yeah, they don't get it. I definitely get it, though.
What about I'm going with three. Let's do three fantasy pets. Three fantasy pets, pets that you could never have in real life. They could be fictional, or they can be like real animals that you just could never have, or a combination thereof.
Dragon.
Love it. Love that was ready to go.
Definitely a dragon. But I think like a mini dragon.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Great.
Dolphin.
Great. Oh, that reminds me that I had a dream about dolphin last night. Wow, we really are hippy dippy.
I brought it in. Brought it in.
Interesting.
Dolphins are actually...
What do they symbolize in a dream?
Creativity and like playfulness. I mean, like that's like pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
But what you would assume. But like if you ever dream of those interesting pink dolphins from the Amazon, mm-hmm. it's like very, in terms of like shamanic stuff, it's very... It symbolizes creativity and like forward.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like stories.
It's so interesting you bring that up because I fully would never have remembered that I dreamt mm-hmm. about dolphins last night and you just said that.
Mm-hmm.
It was outside at night. Can't really remember where I was with some friends. nighttime dolphins. So mm-hmm. nighttime bouncing, splashing dolphins.
Like a bunch of dolphins. Or maybe yeah. like a couple.
Yeah, a couple.
That's awesome. Yeah, I feel that like means. That's good. That's playful creativity.
Great. Interesting that it was night though, huh?
That is interesting.
Because I could just see them like shining in the light, like, you know, as they would jump mm-hmm. out of the waves. But it wasn't mm-hmm. like I was just watching them.
Maybe it's like hidden, like a hidden creativity. Because like the night.
I love it. All okay, right.
I could keep going.
I got my eyes peeled.
okay. Third
animal. Third.
Honestly, as a kid, I have a beautiful golden retriever now that is just so spectacular. And I love her so much, Tiger Lily. And I would probably say a dog because I didn't have pets growing up. And right? I always really wanted a dog. And I always would give like a yearly presentation to my family.
Oh,
and I would be like, this the pitch these meeting. Were the reasons. The pitch meeting. And my dad, we would always vote and we would go around in a circle and my dad would always write veto on the piece of paper. But he would listen to the whole presentation.
Yeah.
And I would think that I got him, but then he would veto.
He really wrote it down? Did you guys all write something down? Yeah. Like
he vetoed.
And he vote and he always had the veto power.
Mm-hmm.
Are your parents still together?
Yeah.
That's great. Okay. How about three places in the world that you have not yet been, but that you want to go?
Oh, I definitely want to go to Peru.
Ooh.
I definitely.
What draws you to Peru?
Just like the ruins. Like mm-hmm. I want to see like ancient ruins in Peru.
The ancient ruins in Peru, to me, I associate as very female. I don't know if that's for a reason, but for some reason, it feels very female to me.
That's interesting.
Opposed to like if you said you wanted to go to Greece, I would not, or Turkey.
Yeah.
When I think about those ruins, they seem very masculine to me. For some reason, Peruvian ruins in my head, based on, by the way, nothing.
That, no.
Seems
it's
very
definitely
female and
something.
Very like...
Like womb-ish.
Gut and womb-ish.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I need to know more about Peru.
Well, it's such a spiritual place. And like I kind of dabble in, you know, shamanic kind of therapies and stuff like that. And Peru is always just feels like a safe, magical place that I would want to like just participate in somehow.
It's kind of a great name too. It'd be cool if like you named your kid Peru.
Peru. Yeah.
I like it. All right. Yeah. All right. What about what else?
I've never been to Spain.
Me neither.
And I'd love to go and like live there. Well, I should probably visit first, see if I like it.
This is the visiting one.
This is the visiting
one. I'm writing down visit to remind myself.
And, well, just based on what you've described, just your journeys there in New Zealand.
I did. Just I was just selling.
No,
our pitch meeting was me in New Zealand for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you would love it. I really do. I'll report
it very
back
like,
on the South Island.
Like very green, yes.
It's very
and
green.
Very...
There's lots of, well, it's a really disparate for such a small island. I mean, I've only been to North Island. I'm going to South Island soon, but the North Island, there's a lot of different stuff to see, including desert, mountain ranges. But in general, yes, a lot of green and a lot of sheep.
I love sheep.
I started calling them. I don't think I brought this up on the podcast before, but we were seeing so many of them, and you see them from great distances, like little white dots on these green hillsides, that I started calling them hill maggots. Now listen, listen.
They
hill
just
maggots
look like
are
little
so cute. Squirmy white maggots from a distance, but I mean that in a loving way.
That's
I loved
so great.
Hill maggots.
Maggots.
Yeah, it's a really great country. I'm super excited to go back. Okay. Let's say three styles of like a home that you'll have, that's like a you know, it's like your second home somewhere. We'll figure out where that is because it's not one of these places that you've never been before.
Okay.
But what style of home? Like
okay, I've underwater cave.
Oh my God, this is great.
I would always have this. I have a recurring dream
Ooh.
Of an underwater cave that I like live
very,
in.
Very female to me also.
Yeah. Totally.
I mean,
totally.
Please, I'm not. Well, what am I, genius? Come on, Janet.
Groundbreaking.
Yeah. Mine is that I live in a giant tower, a giant brown tower. Okay, that's not phallic at all, Janet. Okay, underwater cave. So what's the cave like?
Well, it's...
Moist? It probably smells like Pirates of the Caribbean.
Totally.
Great.
It's like a little plug-in.
Yeah.
A pirate plug-in.
Uh-huh.
It's weird because it's not totally underwater, but it like when it's high tide, it's underwater. But when
there was
tide,
a cave
underwater.
Like that in one of the James Bond movies, if memory serves, that like at a certain type of the tide, you swim through like this like channel and like it comes up into this cave that's
like a mid-century house, kind of.
It'd be great.
That's because
probably
it's kind of like that. Like it's kind of like a mid-century house. Like it's like a spy cave. I
mean, yeah, that's kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I love it.
And also like a castle-y Ireland hillside stone,
love it.
Like house of stone.
Love it.
Very old. And then,
I mean, there's no way that's not haunted. As long as you're on board for that.
Oh yeah, I'm on board with that. Nice ghosts, like all kind, helping spirits,
singing, maybe some singing ghosts. Sulky
yes.
kind of ghosts.
Love it. And let's see. I think something just. I love a good like ride on the water cottage, like great. Beach cottage.
Great. This is great. Okay, so let's put, this is going to be interesting because if you're going to place these things, it might end up being if you pick something like, example, if you picked the Tucson Desert and you ended up with a castle, an Irish castle in the desert, that's going to be weird. So we're just going to see how this plays out. Okay. But give me three locations you have indeed been and would love to have this second home.
Tucson, foothills.
Love it. I'm excited to see how this shakes out because none of these things we've described can really exist there.
Big Sur, without a doubt. Underwater cave can definitely be.
All three can happen in Big Sur. Tucson foothills is going to be a challenge. Although I like the idea of like a weird deserty, like the snow, melt running off and creating the underwater cave scenario somehow.
Oh, I could see that.
Okay, Tucson, Big Sur.
And I really honestly am not well traveled, and that's something I plan to remedy this year.
Yeah.
And maybe next year.
Just this year.
I've
get it all
a
in
a couple more months to really make it happen. I mean, I'm kind of limited just because I haven't.
Well, you know what? It doesn't matter if you haven't been there then, because if you want to go Ireland because you have that image of the Irish castle, we can see if that pans out.
Someplace tropical.
Oh, okay.
Because I love being hot at night.
God, opposite.
Yeah. So, but you know what? I remember I was in like upstate New York at a farmhouse with a friend, and it was nighttime and it was raining and I was warm and I was like
nice.
In warm rain.
Yeah.
And I was thinking like, I totally dig this climate.
Yeah.
Like, I could live in this climate.
Yeah.
So do that upstate.
Wait. Upstate, warm, rainy upstate.
You're warm, yeah.
These all can work with that too. So Tucson's the real wild card in this one.
Okay.
And then I know how in love you are right now, so I'm just not going to force this on you. I'm not going to force you to like give me crushes of other people.
Oh, but I can do that.
Okay, great. Sometimes you can't. Like, I remember I did it. I think there was somebody that I tried that on, and they were like, but I'm so in love right now. I just can't even imagine. I was like, all right. Pretty much everybody else has been.
I mean,
able to
I am so in love.
I know you're so in love,
Johnny.
But this is the mash game
like
of
fantasy.
It could be somebody, yeah, and it can be someone that you. It can be three answers of like guys that you had crushes on, celebrity guys you had crushes on in high school, or it can be like completely fictitious people, like a character from a book or a Gene Kelly character or something like that. Three crushes.
Okay, three crushes. I definitely have always had. Like a weird James Franco thing.
I mean, it's totally understandable.
He's so dreamy.
Please.
So just like.
To many people, he's the perfect man.
Problem. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but he's also so bright and so like curious and interested in the world.
And he kind of just does whatever he wants. And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I appreciate that sense of sorry if you don't like it.
Super crush worthy.
And I wish I had more of that.
Super crush worthy, especially for those qualities. Okay, James Franco.
I've always had a weird crush on Chloe Sevigny, and I think she's gonna be one of mine too. I mean, she's just so interesting and cool, and like I feel like I could make it work with her. Like I could date Chloe Sevigny just
because
she's so cool.
Yeah
and she just has amazing style. Okay,
great.
So
answer, she does. That's certainly true.
Let's see here. I mean, it's really hard to sift through because
Well, you and I are both very enthusiastic about people.
Yeah.
So then you can sort of find something kind of amazing and engaging about almost everyone.
Yeah, no, I really can. What is that guy from?
Oh, let me get in on this. I love a good guessing game.
Oh my God, it's right on the tip of my tongue. That huge man from Game of Thrones.
Who died. Oh my God, Jason Momoa.
Yeah.
Oh my God, him. I know him.
You
because,
do?
Because he did the same Armageddon convention that I did in New Zealand. I was traveling in New Zealand with
Is
that man.
Is he from New Zealand?
I don't think so.
Because he looks like a Maori. Like he looks.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Like,
no. Oh my God.
But I also my I only association so with him is him as yeah. like
I think he was on Stargate too. Yeah, he was definitely on Stargate also. Here's the thing. First of all, I love it. I spent almost no time with him because he was so out there having adventures, like whatever I was doing and traveling doing, he was like, he flew to the South Island and he da da da. And then he spent the day. And while he was there, I think his grandmother passed away and he had like an amazing ceremony with the Maoris.
Oh, no. Of course he's did.
Like he's whatever you have in your head about what he might be, he is that
he
person.
He is that. See, that's so, good. I'm glad that
it's ridiculous. It's okay, ridiculous. Yeah. Like the first night in New Zealand, we had this party of like, you know, the sort of the meet and greet party. Mm-hmm. And Lance Henriksen was also there. And he walked into the room and Jason Momoa ran across the room. I guess they've worked together before. God, I hope so. And like swooped and like picked up Lance Henriksen and like spun him around. And was like, buddy.
A man that scoops up another man in his arms and swings him around. Adorable. Like, yes, please.
Yeah, it was great. So I'm so excited about the fact that I have any connection at all to that. All right. So now I'm going to do the little spiral that determines how many rings. You tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm going to pause this, do some tallying, and I will come back with your 100% guaranteed future.
Oh my God.
Yeah. All right. So we've had some really cool developments. I got to get this out of the way right away because I can't really make it make sense. So the thing is, you know, the mash the top part is mansion, apartment, chakra house. Mm-hmm. Then I did the sort of like style of house somewhere, but then I also did the location. We knew that this was a little bit of a challenge. So here's where I'm going with this. I'm going to go with an extraordinary departure from mash rules. I'm changing it so that you now have two homes. In addition to where you are now.
So I have my home and a vacation home.
You have your home here, you have a vacation home, and you have your third home.
Oh,
so you have
wow.
three homes. Because we landed on the Tucson foothills.
Oh, okay. So that was kind of the one that
But then I realized also that you have a shack somewhere. So your shack is in the Tucson foothills. So you have this like kind of weird folksy shack in the Tucson foothills.
Okay, it's like a meditation
yes,
portal.
Exactly. It's a meditation portal. Perfect. In the under the stars. You don't need more than that in Tucson anyway.
Yeah.
But you do also have an Irish castle in Ireland because you did say Irish castle.
Nice.
So you do have those things. I feel also that the Irish castle somehow also ties into the fact that you have made Pirates of the Caribbean a real thing.
Oh.
So it feels like, I understand that we're talking about the Caribbean when we talk about pirates, but let's just take that and pick that up and put it somewhere near. It feels like those things make sense to me, like this sort of dark, stormy castle that like there's pirate ships and like the under.
Like
yeah,
mold.
You could almost
totally.
Even say that there's like an underwater cave somewhere to do with like getting, you know, the pirates like hide their booty
right.
like in this cave that's sort of off of
yes.
the Irish castle.
Yes.
So it feels
yes.
like it satisfies
yes.
a lot of different things. Amazing. Also makes sense to me that you have a mini dragon.
Well, of course
at
I
said
do.
Castle.
I have a castle.
And also, you know, at the shack, you might need the dragon to start a fire for you. So it's multi-purpose. I'm excited for you to spend your day with the wonderful Freddie Mercury.
Aww.
Very cool.
I'm
very
so glad.
Cool. I'm also excited for you because although you did not, as you know, get Gene Kelly in the spend a day with, doesn't matter because you can spend however much time with him whenever you want because you can go inside the movie singing in the rain
yes!
whenever you want. So double win on that.
Oh my God.
Double win. You still got him. You still got him.
This is the best life.
And then I just want to also tell you that I feel certain you're going to have an amazing trip to New Zealand with James Franco.
Oh
yeah.
Man.
I mean, you hit the jackpot.
That is such
really
the jackpot.
You really hit the mash jackpot.
I might temporarily poison James Franco and take John Ames.
Mm-hmm.
Not
understood.
Because I just feel like John Ames would be more fun on like a vacation.
Take
like
John
I feel like
Ames
James Franco would be like, I need to take a break so I can like
ride this motorcycle into the middle of the ocean.
Like, I feel like he would ditch me. So I'm going to take my actual fiance.
I think that's fair. You know what? Maybe James is just holding down one of these other forts for the time being.
Yeah. We'll put a pin in James.
Chilling in the castle, writing a movie or something.
Totally.
Congratulations on this.
Congratulations. I love my life.
On the show.
Thank you.
I adore you. I'm so glad that you came over.
Oh, I just had the best time. You're the best. You're so good at life.
Oh, listen, that is not true, but I appreciate you saying that. Guys, feel free to weigh in on the various social media outlets. And we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys. Bye.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.